Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, that the midweek show of the Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who make the fine art with needle and thread thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
Right now.
Thank you so much. All right, I've been needle pointing. The Anasazi song. Because I got to do it. We're recording on Tuesday. I got to do it Monday. I got to stitch for the first time in like 4 days. But the yard looks great. The garden's completely weeded. You know, all the things. Because it's like, you know, out weeding the garden and stuff. And you come in, you take a shower. It's like, no, I'm not doing anything. So so I got the center thing done with all the Krynek threads. And I have to say, it came out pretty nice with the double fan doubled and everything. And now I'm working on the outside. And it's a whole lot less thinking, lot less tedious. There's some Krynek thread that gets couched on the outside of the main core. And it's 70. I was putting in 72 inch long lengths of Krynek thread braid.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask what kind, like what size.
Yeah, it was HL21. I think it was number 8 braid.
Mm-hmm.
But 72 inches long, putting in these massive strands, and then it gets all couched down with another thread. It's going to be beautiful. But
yeah.
Oh man. You gotta go so slow, and you gotta stretch it all out because it just wants to curl up and knot up. And,
yeah,
yeah. So I had a couple knots, but
tension. Yeah, tension on those I find is tough too. That was the first Debbie Rowley piece I had some of that Krynek number 8, and that was the first lesson I learned was to pull it a lot tighter than I thought I needed it, because it looks nice and tight, and then it relaxes into the fabric, and then it looks really loose.
right, very true. So, yeah.
So you end up pulling it as you're doing it, like to the point where you're like, no, this doesn't look good. And then as soon as it relaxes down, it's fine.
Yeah. Yep. So I had some healthy strands of braid all curled up, but I got it in. So now couching is the next step, and it's beautiful. There's three of them, this Anasazi song, and then there's Spirit in something else. There's three designs that are similar but different. And I was just going to do this one because it was in a needlepoint now from several years ago. But I'm thinking I might do the other two, because the three of them on a wall would be really attractive. So I'm thinking I might jump on that. Mm-hmm.
Would you do them in similar colorways, or would they each be sort of their own color story?
That's a good question, because I don't recall the other two what colorways. I'm sure they're all designed to go together, but whether they're identical colorways, I don't know. But that's something I would look at, is changing those maybe, because this one, it's golds and kind of pinks, and I forget. I'm no color expert, so I shouldn't say. But it's a very attractive combination. But I've wondered, you know, blue being my favorite, I've wondered what it would look like if it was all blue. And I have a feeling it would look pretty nice. So, I'll have to see what the others look like. I don't know if I will or not. I got so many projects. Last thing I need to do is buy two more. So.
Yeah. Well, but you have your stack. We've figured out the people that store their works in progress, and then the people that store their work's not in progress. So it's not a whip. It's what would you call that?
I think that's,
we need
just
a good, yeah.
Just raw stash. Just collecting stuff.
Yeah.
Just collecting stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. But anyway, it's a neat piece. Carol Lake, she's going to do a show with us coming up here too. I'm excited about that. Be exciting to talk to her. But she and Michael Boren, I think that's right, designed these three. And it's a really nice, I really like it. It's a nice needle point. There's a good challenge to it, too. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And I think it's good considering we're both jumping into this gigantic cross stitch to have a little bit of a something very different
Yes.
to
Yes.
sort of cleanse the palate, if you will.
Yeah, it is amazing how much ground you can cover with needlepoint. Yes. Yep, quickly. It's very nice. Yep, so that's what I'm doing. Yeah. Oh, I want to talk. Oh, we'll talk about. I want to talk about pin stitch, but we'll do that when we talk about the Sarah Brazier thing, because I learned something about pin stitching.
Okay.
So don't let me forget that. So let's see here. There are still slots available at Sassy Jack's in August, the 18th and 19th, and the 20th and 21st. Two day sessions. Nicola Parkman is coming, and she's going to teach a sampler that I believe it. Nicola called it a commission, but I've not seen it, so I think it's a sampler she's doing just for Sassy Jack's,
Yeah,
and.
it's on their website, or not the website, on their Facebook page,
Well,
the
okay.
Sassy Jack page.
Okay. So there's still some slots available, and Mark and I are going to be there, and you're working on maybe going there too. So yeah, so we'll do some podcasting and some videoing and those kinds of things while we're there. But yeah, Mark and I are driving down. We've never been to that part of the country, so we're going to take 2 days to drive down there from the Illinois, and 2 days to drive back, so we can see a little of the countryside. And then see the Sassy Jacks and Nicola and hear her presentations. So there's few slots left. I don't know how many and in which things, but contact Kim at Sassy Jacks. But yeah, she's got just I think it's just a handful, but let's sell that thing out. That should be sold out.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think it's going to be really nice.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then for those west of the Mississippi, I think Nicola is going to the Attic after that. For she's not teaching a class or anything, but she's going to be there for a day. Thursday, she said she's going to be there on Thursday to visit, and that's the day when everybody shows up to stitch anyway. So it sounds like it's going to be hang out on Thursday with Nicola Day. So
Well, that certainly sounds like a nice way to spend a Thursday.
I could find a Thursday for that.
Yeah,
Yeah. So yeah, so those west of this Mississippi, you'll be able to see Nicola while she's in the States. And yeah, but gonna be at the Sassy Jacks. That'll be fun. First time there. 'Cause we have the Sassy Jacks and the quilting store and the bakery.
right.
I'll just be in the bakery. Yeah.
No,
Yeah.
you
No, I won't.
won't.
I won't. But yeah, so get to the Sassy Jacks page and fill those up. Fill those slots up. We do not w want Nicola addressing a room that is not full.
I doubt that will happen.
I do too. Yep. And then I think I've mentioned, okay, this is everybody's got to help out here. I think I've mentioned that I've been listening with some regularity to Michelle Garrett, FlossTube, Michelle Garrett, Bendy Stitchy. I get the stitchy part. I don't know what the bendy part is and haven't asked. I don't get that. But I'll just go with Michelle Garrett because that's her name. She is a nurse of some kind, and she said once, and I want to say it has something to do with hospice care or serious long-term illness care of some kind. And she does a walk every year to raise money for Alzheimer's research, because a lot of her patients suffer from that, and so it's one of her things. It's her charity thing. Does a walk every year to raise money. And this year she is connected with Heather, who is the in the FlossTube world the imperfectly perfect stitcher, Heather, at IPS Needleminders on Etsy. And we'll have a link for that Etsy site in the notes for this podcast. But Heather has come up with, I don't know, is it 10 or so different needle minders all related to Alzheimer's? Different sayings, and the ribbon is pretty purple, I believe it is, for the Alzheimer's, that ribbon shape that we use for different causes. And so you can buy, of course you can buy, these needle minders from Heather at $7 a piece. And all $7 go to Michelle Garrett's fundraising for the Alzheimer's Walk. That is a couple of months away, I think it is. And right now she's the leading fundraiser. And so I thought it would be fun to talk about this and encourage everyone to buy at least one Alzheimer's needle minder from Heather on the Etsy shop. And let's just see what we can do. If we can do some serious damage fundraiser-wise for Michelle. I think that would be cool.
So all of the money goes to the fundraiser, which is a rare thing in fundraising, first of all. And $7 is really not much to invest and is really not a bad price for a needle minder anyway. So there's lots of good reasons to do this.
Right. And the other thing you're helping, I learned from the Bendy Stitchy podcast, web floss tube thing, is that this Heather is some kind of a nurse, and she wants to be a lactation consultant. And the Etsy shop that she runs, she has a bunch of other needle minders, some Ouija board stuff, which is pretty cool stuff, and some horror film things, and there's a whole bunch of really different. Oh, she has a bunch of old keys that she's made into needle minders.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm, I'll be picking up a couple of those because they're like $3.50 or $4 a piece. Just old keys. I'm sure it's just, all right, I'll glue a magnet on this and make a thing out of it. So, but anyway, this Etsy shop has made it possible for her to go back to school to become a lactation consultant. So, because her whole thing is, hey, I want to help women in different ways. And so that's pretty neat in its own way to help her out to do that, making needle minders and then to help her so she can go to school. So she's apparently going to start school here within the next few months to become a lactation consultant. And we can all help her do that by buying needle minders, which, we're going to buy anyway. So why not?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're going to flood Michelle Garrett with money for her walk. We're going to help Heather go to school, all at the IPS Needle Minders on Etsy. So there we have it. Yeah, I'm going to get an Alzheimer's one, and then I'm getting at least two keys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like the keys. That's a really cool idea.
Yeah. Oh, I think so too. Yeah. Yeah. The Ouija board thing, I don't know where she's getting those, but they're pretty neat too. But yeah. Yeah, you got it, and this is where you got to be careful because they aren't real expensive, but by the time you're done, $40 later.
right. But then you see, a bunch that are, kind of neat, and they're the kind of thing you can have a bunch of.
Right.
Well, especially if you have several works in progress, not that I would ever do that.
No.
You need to have a needle minder on each one.
Right. See, for me, I'd have to put them all on one because I only have one going at a time. So I would just ring it with all of my needle minders.
Yeah. Right, but you have also said that you tend to thread a whole bunch of needles all at once.
Right,
so now
I do,
your needles have their own.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there it is. A needle minder for each needle.
There you go.
How cool am I? Yeah. I'm the ultimate. I'll tell you right there.
Sounds very organized, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not how it goes on the stand there. No, it's one needle minder per thing and a bunch of needles on it. But that would be kind of cool. I've got so many of them, I just do one for each needle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the word is that's the call to action right there. We're going to help Michelle Garrett go way over the top with fundraising, and we're going to help Heather, the imperfectly perfect stitcher, pay for schooling, and all have some pretty cool needle minders.
I love it.
Yes. But you're right. That $7, I thought Michelle would say they're $7 a piece and $4 comes to the fundraising, but it's all $7. So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, a lot of people have that relatives that have suffered or are suffering with Alzheimer's. I'm fortunate in not having anyone, but that's an ugly disease, so it needs
And
to
you
go
never
away.
know.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
It
Yeah.
could be you or I.
Yeah, I know. I've thought about that. I could be first in line. Yep. So it's a disease that needs to go away. Yeah. So there we have it. That's the big call to action. The big call to action. So let's see. We have Nicola taken care of. We have Michelle Garrett taken care of. I wanted to ask you. This is okay. This is I need a woman's opinion. Okay.
Okay, this never ends well.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, and I forgot. Oh, I forgot another. I knew I was going to look up something. So hold that thought. Hold that thought. Which I
Okay,
didn't
this
even give you
gave me
the
an
thought, but hold
opportunity to
it.
prepare.
Yeah. I didn't give you the thought, but hold it. There was a post, and now see, here I am. I forgot to do the research, so I don't have it. Al was his name, and his wife does one of the reproduction sampler businesses. And he's a cyclist, bicycle. Sounded like he was about my age, 60s, mid-60s, something like that. Anyway, the other day he was killed 2 blocks from home by a car, riding his bike. And, you know, that's just, of course, when I hear that, that gets me on several levels, you know,
Yeah.
because that's, I ride on the road all the time and I'm very wary and, because it happens from time to time that cyclists get hit, and in the cycling community, it's not unusual for people to say it's inevitable that you're going to get hit by a car. It's just when, you know, and then so then I think about that and I feel bad for that family because that's just you know, it's just awful. It's just awful to have that happen. And he's 2 blocks from home, and his ride was done, and you know he's doing what he loves, and that's just terrible. And so feel bad for them. But then I thought, you know, you and I are two wheel things because you still have your motorcycle, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And one cool bike it is. But you know, we're both vulnerable at different levels to people who are distracted drivers, and you've had a recent experience with that. And
Yeah.
people with cars. Now, the other morning, I was riding, and there's a light that I have to cross a major road. I'm just on a side road. I have to cross a major road. The light was changing. It's 4 lanes plus turn lanes. So I was first in line. I try to get across the road as quick and out of the intersection as quick as I can. So I'm out of the way. You know, I don't want to be in the middle of anything. So the light's changing and I get ready to go. The light changes and I pick up my foot to clip into my pedal to go. And I saw him coming. Two guys in a white car ran the red light and were getting a chuckle out of making me stop and put my foot back down. I mean, they ran a red as red can be light just to have a little fun with me, which they didn't have any fun because I saw them coming and didn't trust them from, you know, 200
And you're
yards
lucky
back.
you did.
Yeah, I mean, because I watched like a hawk. And I thought, you know, come on, folks. If he'd hit me, okay, you get your chuckle for 30 seconds, you hit me, and then you have a lifelong of that on your conscience, if they have a conscience, and or legal issues forever. And you know, it is not worth it. Watch for, in the summer, watch for motorcyclists, watch for cyclists, watch for runners. You know, we're all out
Children
there.
running, right? Children
Yep.
running into roads. So in motorcycle school, they teach you two things. They teach you, number one, ride like you're invisible. And it actually makes you a better car driver as well, because you become aware of things that are much further away from you. And you tend to look in all different directions all the time. So you're constantly scanning your environment because you have this sort of drilled into your head that no one can see you,
Right.
because basically people, don't notice motorcycles, which for Harley riders, people think that they're very, very obnoxious. But one of the reasons that sometimes people do that is because now you can hear them coming, right?
Yes, right.
Lesson number two, ride like everyone is trying to kill you, because often they are. as you just stated. So yes, it is bike season for both of us, motorized and non. So yeah, definitely it, and put your phone down,
No
please.
kidding. Yeah,
You
please.
know, our kids are going to be on the roads. Kids are running out into the streets. We're all out on the roads, and especially motorcycles, and bicycles. Yes, it's time to slow down. It's the summer. Where are you going in a rush anyway?
Right. Well, yeah, and that's just it. Like bikes like yours doesn't make a lot of noise, does it? I mean, it's not a
Nope.
particularly loud bike. It's not a big Harley.
No. No, I had the big loud Harley, and now I have the very brightly colored, not very noisy bike. So I dress very visibly, and the bike itself is pretty, it's black and like a highlighter yellow color. So,
Yeah.
and again, they teach you to, dress conspicuously, ride conspicuously, all of those things. But that said, that doesn't mean that somebody that you're only conspicuous to somebody that's actually looking.
Right. Yep.
So.
So true. Yeah, no, I have a taillight. It's become the practice even in full-blown sun to have a taillight on my bike. And I have I spent $100 on a good taillight that can be seen from, a mile plus away, and full daylight, that thing's on. And I'll tell you, it works. People notice you. But yeah, you got to do all those things, because there's always somebody who's not paying attention, and then there's always somebody who just has to go as close as they can to me without hitting me, and I have no idea what thrill they get out of it, because they get no reaction out of me. I don't give any reaction. You're not going to get me to flip you off or be upset, because I'm not giving them that satisfaction. But
No,
it's
no.
just dangerous, it's just stupid. So, yep.
Yep.
Okay, there's your public service safety announcement for the day, the week, the summer, for the summer. Pay attention. Pay attention.
Watch for us two-wheelers, please.
Yes, we appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, now back to the woman thing.
We are all over the place today.
Yes,
Okay.
it's a greasy surface. Hang on. So, okay, I listened to Mark Maron. His podcast WTF, and it stands for
Yes.
exactly that. And
Yes. And it's brilliant.
it's brilliant. The guy is superb. I mean, you got to deal with language. If language bothers you, he doesn't overdo it, but he doesn't hesitate, nor do his guests. But he is a superb interviewer, just one of my favorites. I really enjoy listening to him, and he gets some of the best guests. The one that put him on the map was when he got President Obama, when he was actually president. What a superb interview with him. And but he gets all the stars. And so I was listening the other day. He was interviewing Rachel Bloom, and they were talking about, of course, from her perspective, what it's like to be in show business as a female and to operate at levels above, just above an actor, like producing and those kinds of things. And
Yes.
they were talking about the perception, male perception of art from females. And the consensus between the two of them was that if a female creates it or produces it in any way or is involved, it's immediately viewed as fluffy or lightweight art, movies, TV, whatever it might be.
Right.
And then, how do you change that perception? And so then I immediately thought, of needlework as art. And does it get that same thing, or is it, because it's primarily a female hobby, does it not matter? Because males don't interact with it very often, that doesn't matter. And so it
Yes.
was just an interesting discussion they had. And so then I wondered, how would you react to that?
I think we've brushed on this subject quite a few times before when we've talked about needlework as art. And I think the answer I would give just off the top of my head is that the general populace looks at needlework as a craft. And we've talked about the difference between what is an art and what is a craft. And so if you think back through history, originally needlework, tapestries, the art, if you will, the things that would hang in a museum were done by men, right? And rugs, things that were, the original, the art form were done by men. William Morris, for example, things like that. Then when it came down to translating that into something that you would make for your home, so a kit or a needlework thing, or translating a pattern onto a shirt collar or something like that, then it becomes woman's work. So women would take the art and apply it to a functional item. And somehow in the midst of that, it becomes a craft. So the analogy I would use is cooking, right? So if you think about it, how many female, super, super, superstar, Michelin star chefs are women? Much fewer than half. But how many women are the primary, cookers? If you will, in their homes, most right, M much greater than half, because when it's the making of the objects that keep a family running, it becomes women's work. But when it's considered an art form, it's considered men's work. And I think that there's overlap, and I think that there's definitely people that cross over in all cases. But I think it's tough. And I think in needlework, that's one of the things that women that we've spoken to that definitely consider what they do to be art and have entered it into galleries and have pieces in museums and things, that's one of the hurdles that they've had to overcome, is the idea that people immediately look at a canvas and put it in the craft section. So I think that's my immediate thought. Now, all of that said, I would go back to something you said just a few weeks ago, where you were trying to define the difference between an art and a craft. And a craft, you had said, and correct me if I misquote you, a craft is where you replicate something that someone has already made. And art is when you take something that someone has already made or take something completely de novo and create it. Right, so art is something new, and craft is something replicated. So,
So like if you were to take the Anasazi song, if I were to take that and change that, keep the same format and change it, I forget who it was that was quoted in that, but then
right.
yes, that would become art because I put my touch, my perspective on this design. Yes.
Right. So, okay, I'm thinking, and something came up recently that made me think of this also. So, if you were to stitch a piece for a county fair that was a beautiful, okay, so for example, I'm stitching the Debbie Rowley Black Magic piece, right? Now, this is a charted piece. I'm following the directions. I could enter it into a county fair, and I would consider it a craft, as would they, right? Is it a piece of art? Sure. Is me making it art? Probably not, because all I'm doing is following directions, right? Now, contrast that with something else that came up recently. The San Francisco School of Needlework put out a challenge, and this is something they do regularly, and this just happened to be the first one that I caught. They're doing one, the gist of it is they have a sponsor. This time the sponsor is Krynek. So they send you a small packet of Krynek fibers, and they give you a theme, and you have to create something using those fibers and whatever else you want to, that evokes the theme, right? And the themes are very, very general. This one is burlesque, but not in the way that people use it now, but in the way that was more traditionally used in literature and theater, meaning something taken, so far out of context as to be absurd. So, over the top. It was also known as travesty, like so something way almost exaggerated, right? And so as examples, they gave like pictures of people in disco with, giant afros and costumes and things like that. So it's very exaggerated things. So that where you have to sit there and all you have is a bundle of fibers and you have to come up with something that's an interpretation of an idea completely out of your own head, that I would think is art. That's a clear distinction. Now there's a lot of gray area in between of where something is art and where something is craft. And I think that different people are going to have different opinions about it. And I think that's fine, because that said, all of that said, we have to be careful not to attribute a value to each of those words and to the activities that are associated with those words. There's a temptation to think that art is loftier than craft. And I don't believe that that's the case, to me, anyway. I think that craft has a value to the person that's creating it. It has a value to the people that will enjoy it because it will hang on a wall or it will serve a purpose. It will be a cushion or a chair or, some other object, a box, a tray. It serves a function in the home in which it will reside. Or it'll be an item of clothing. So craft has a value. It just doesn't have the same value as art. It's a different application. It serves a different need. So it's not that one or the other is more important or more valuable. They're just different.
Let me try this on you. If I
Okay.
showed up, at an event and held up a black magic that I had stitched, and then you showed up several hours later and held up a black magic that you had stitched, would the perception of each of those pieces be different?
Because simply because a man held it up in a woman.
Right.
That's interesting. In this field, I don't think so. I don't think that people would judge it based on the sex of the person carrying it. I'm sure that they would see you
They
and see
judge
the
me, I guarantee you
Well,
that.
no, so we go back to the aquarium days where you and I were doing aquariums, and I was the weird person who didn't fit in because, I was very much an oddball being a woman doing what we were doing. I don't think that I ever felt like people judged what I did. I think people looked at it a lot longer because they expected that I wouldn't be as good as the men that were doing it. But then once they looked, they would look at what I did and what you did, and they would say, oh, these are equivalent. And then it would be a non-issue. So I think that they would look at what you did and they would probably give you a little bit of a side eye, I think, like, oh, what's going on here? But then they'd look at the piece and I know your work and I know it's impeccable. And it would take, seconds for them to say, oh, this is, this is exceptional work, and then it would be a non-issue.
Okay.
Much the same way as a female chef might have to, she might have to go through a little bit more examination, because people will doubt. People, if you don't look like what people expect you to be, then people will doubt that you can do what you can do. So you may have to show a few more pieces or do a couple more things until people say, oh yeah, okay, you are as good as everybody else. And then once you prove that, I think that it goes away.
Yeah. And that whole food cooking chef thing is the craziest upside down thing on the planet. Because it should be top to bottom, completely female dominated, with just a few men. I that one has just always baffled me.
Well,
Because
what about
the ground up training, the ground up experience is female. It's so weird to me.
Right, but then it's men that go to chef school, and that's a whole other, it's a whole discipline, right? What's the difference between a tailor and a seamstress?
Well, yeah, exactly. There's another one.
Right?
Yes.
How many shops on Savile Row in England making the finest suits and the finest handmade, hand-tailored things are run by women?
Probably not very
I
many.
can't think of one. Right? Is there even a word for a female tailor? I don't think there is.
Yeah, you're a
Right?
seamstress. Yeah.
You're a
You
seamstress. You
hem
do
stuff.
alteration. Exactly. So, there's differences. There's differences, but I don't think that they are that it is unable to you that you can't overcome them, but all of that said, I think that the general population looks at anything stitched, maybe a tapestry type thing would be considered art, but the kind of things that we do, especially if it's from a needlework shop or any of those things, they would look at as craft. You would have to really do something unusual for it to be considered art. It would have to be, to my thinking, for someone that is uneducated, and by that I mean somebody that doesn't walk in our world and talk needlepoint all the time, for them to recognize it as art, it would have to be something that does not look like needlepoint and does not look like cross stitch. You know what I mean? It would have to be very avant-garde and use weird fibers and three-dimensional, or do something where somebody could look at that and say, oh yeah, that's a mixed media piece or something. Otherwise, I think people would look at it and say, oh yeah, that's something like my grandmother used to make.
And that's too bad, 'cause what's wrong with a good craft?
Right, and it's almost because someone's grandmother used to make it devalues it, right? So all of those grandmas who got really, really good at things now have made it so that those things look simple and easy and no longer qualify as art. It's kind of an odd thing, isn't it?
Yet it is art. You
Of course it
know,
is.
it's art all across the board. 'Cause how is needle painting different from brush painting? Just a different medium. And these designs that we have, charted designs. I mean, that's art. That's art. Somebody actually had to create that out of nothing. And then you look at a painted canvas, and okay, that's a piece of art to begin with, and so many of them come from art, come from a painting and get just put on canvas. But then there's that next level of art where someone interprets that with stitches and thread and color and brings it to life. Boy, I saw a stocking the other day that three-dimensional as you could be. I was just mind blown by it. And I showed Marga. She, holy smokes, look at that thing. And it, some something that someone has stitched for a grandchild, I think. But just gorgeous work. And how is that not art? I mean, that's not craft. That's art. That's interpreting and bringing it to life.
Right. And I think the other thing too is that in craft, for someone who is familiar with the craft, there's an element of appreciating the technique and what went into making something. So for someone that is uninitiated, they look at all the pieces the same. So they assume that every piece takes about the same level of skill, unless it's something really, weird. About the same level of skill, so all needle workers are the same. So if you can do this, thing that's all Bargello stitch, then you can do something else that's all double fan doubles, and it's all the same to them. Whereas somebody that does do those things can look at something that is a very simple stitch, across the entire board, versus something that's got double fan doubles and Jessica's all over the place, and and walnuttos and complicated things and working with difficult fibers, and they would look at it and say, whoa, the person who did that is really good because that piece is impeccable and all of those stitches are difficult to execute. So they're also, it takes an eye for knowing that that piece is difficult to do, right? It's like ice skating, you know, like to me, because I don't know anything about ice skating. Okay, the person did a turn, okay,
It
but
didn't
to an ice
fall.
skater, right? To an ice skater, it's like, but no, that was a double turnaround. But they started on the back of their skate and they landed on the front of their skate, and that's like impossible to do. And I would have no idea, right? So you have to know the thing in order to be able to evaluate the level of skill that it took to create the thing, right? So, you know, that ice skating also becomes art, doesn't it? But it's also skill and technique. So I guess there's a little bit of craft in all arts, and a bit of art in many crafts.
Okay, I can ride with that. Now, explain to
Okay.
me the difference between a sow cow and a Lutz.
Yeah, I like I said, I don't know anything about those things.
No. And I've actually looked those up, and I still whatever. Sounds good to me.
Yes.
You didn't fall, so bravo.
I know that they make it look way easier than it is.
Oh yeah, ain't no way I'm doing that. No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I struggled
Thing
to skate backwards, so.
yeah, things would get broken. Yes.
Yes.
Well, so okay, so that's interesting. It was just an interesting discussion they had, 'cause of course from Rachel Bloom's perspective, and what's gone on in entertainment with all of the sexual harassment garbage that's gone on, it was also in that context. How do you, as a woman, get respected? I mean, there was just several levels to it, and but that one I took out of it, and well, something that will never always be discussed, I think, always be discussed.
It's a very big conversation. It's a very, very big conversation. And for anybody that works in any sort of industry that's male dominated, it's an even bigger conversation. There's a lot to it.
And I'm never going to figure out why those men. I don't get that, but I don't know. Just made different, I guess. The Sarah Brazier stitch along. Now, for those who are not doing the Sarah Brazier, Christine and I are working as we talk about it to have things that will apply to you. So don't tune us out. But we are going to talk about the Sarah Brazier thing because it's interesting. There's two things that I wanted to talk about, and one is pin stitch, and one is stitching that border and making sure it meets up. So here's what I learned with the pin stitch. This is I learned this the hard way, because I was working on that Serapar sampler, which is one strand of silk or one thread of silk over two. And I was using the Vonna Pfeiffer pin stitch, where you make one leg of the X
Yes.
as a pin stitch, and then you stitch over it and on you go. And what I discovered with silk was that it was slippery enough that it was not unusual, and it happened several times, for that to come undone, that it would not hold, it would slide. Where if I were stitching with cotton or something like otherwise, cotton, I guess, would be the alternative, there's enough friction to hold it. And even when I made that one X and tugged on it and made sure it was tight, it still would from time to time come undone. So I had to go back many times, more than once, probably half a dozen times, and take out small sections and restitch them because they were coming undone. So then I thought, well, wait a minute, how can I be doing the pin stitch wrong? Because I followed Donna's instructions, and and it's worked in other pieces. It wasn't like this was the first time for me, So I thought, well, it must be just the slipperiness of the silk that is not holding this. So then I thought, well, all right, how does Nicola show to do the pin stitch? And so I went and watched her video, and she does it different.
Yeah, she I think does, I do it the Nicola way.
Do you? Because it's side to side. It's not creating a leg. It's side to side. It's like a horizontal. But you don't pin stitch where the first X is going to be. You pin stitch the one next to it, and then you go back. Like if you're going left to right, you would pin stitch under what will be under the second X, and then you go back and do the first one, and then come back and stitch over your pin stitch. And you can't see it. And so then I went to do it that way, and my problem went away doing it the way Nicola shows it with silk. So it was something I learned. And so then I've been doing that with the silk on that sampler ever since, and have not had one even come close to getting loose. But I really like the Vana approach, where you make one leg of the X, because I just like the way it works, especially if you're using on bigger count and you're using not using silk. So it seems to hold there. So maybe it's just me and I'm not using it right, but it seemed like I found that depending on what you're stitching, there are two different ways to do the pin stitch. And so I was doing them different.
So I think that's useful though, because now you know you can try, especially if you're using silks, the first time you try it, do it the Vana way, because it makes sense. And then just really tug on it and see if you can wiggle the thread loose, I guess. And if you can, then you know you have to default to the other way.
Yes. Yes. So that's what I've been doing. And it's held. Using the Nicola way with silk, one strand of silk, that is holding perfectly. And you can't see it, so it doesn't matter. I mean, that's the whole purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the pin stitch, because then I'm not flipping the scroll rods over to
tie
in the back.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just absolutely obsessed with making sure that those things never come loose. So it's always going to be a thing for me anyway, but, that's working. And then I'm using the Nicola pin stitch when you end a row and you're not going to have another, like it ends and you're not going to have another X to it. I'm using that, the technique she uses, but then I still go to the back and tuck it under.
Because
the way she does it, I don't think you ever have to flip your thing over. You just cut it close but I can't help it. At the end, I just got to tuck it under. So
habit. So just for people who don't know, where can they find videos of these stitches?
Well, at Hands Across the Sea Samplers, there's Nicola has a whole techniques thing, and you can find her technique there. It's a video, so you can watch it. And then Vana has the same thing. She has Vana has more than one video showing how she does the pin stitch, and both work. I just wanted to share my example with both. And I still prefer now that I. When I'm not using silk, I will still go back to the Vana one, because I just prefer it in terms of its cleanliness. But either way works, and you can't see either one. You can't tell the difference at all. So, yeah, just interesting.
Yeah, I think for me with cross stitch, that was a life changer, because it just makes it so that you can, starting and stopping is not never a problem anymore, because you never struggle with, I don't have any place, and, do I have to do it away knot, and nothing's going to, it's going to show, and
right.
You never have to worry about any of that. That problem is gone.
Right. And particularly valuable if you're stitching things like samplers or other cross-stitch pieces where there are these little items sitting out in the middle of space. Incredibly valuable. Yeah. Yep. Time saver, thread saver, all of it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that was something I learned. The hard way in a lot of ways, but oh well. And then there was an interesting thing. People are stitching, because this Sarah Brazier sampler is huge. and it has this double band of X's all the way around, and then that's filled with satin stitch. So the question and the challenge is, how can I be accurate enough that when I get all the way around to the bottom corner, that it meets up? You know, that it actually comes together the way it is. And you certainly right. want that, because you know where the problem's going to be. It's going to be way
it's
back.
It's going to be yeah. Right. So stitch. You don't want to do the whole piece in a state of anxiety.
Right, exactly. So people in the stitch along who have threads and linen and are stitching, one of the triumphs has been when people get all the way around and it matches up. And if in the video I did with Jean Lee, and Jean is doing well, chemo and all those things, so glad to see that. And Jean, her hair started to fall out. She put a picture in the newsletter. Get the most recent newsletter. She talks a little bit about her journey so far, but she just went ahead and just eliminated the hair rather than wait for it to fall out, which, you know, why not? It's going to get there anyway. And she said it's going to be so liberating in the summer. And I thought, yeah, there you go. Yeah, make a thing out of it. Why not? So she seems to be doing well. But in the video I did with her, which is at wetalkfiber.com/Sarah B, she talked about doing the entire border, both the bands, the satin stitch bands, and the undulating vine as you go, so that you don't get out of whack. As that would, she said that was her technique. But others have been just stitching the double row of X's, the outer double row of X's.
Right, to fill in later.
Right. And so that was, it was interesting. Somebody had put pins, straight pins in every 25 threads so they could keep track, different tracking ways. But this was the best one, I thought, or the most interesting, actually the best one. Kirby Bentley posted that she learned at a bright needle class that when it comes to huge borders, she does half crosses, and on every 10th one, she does a full X. So it would be 9 half crosses and then a full X. And then she goes all the way around, and then when it meets up, assuming it does, which it should, then she goes back and completes the X's.
That makes a lot of sense. It's half the time.
Right. Yeah, because you can stitch half X's like lightning.
Right. And you've got it counted now. It's a lot easier to count each one. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So I thought that was excellent. Yes.
Actually, and you know what I think is even better? Because I was thinking as we were talking about whether or not somebody would want to grid the piece. But if you did that and then didn't immediately go back and finish the X's and left them as halves, you would basically have by default gridded your piece. Because
yes.
as long as you can see your X's on the side, every time there's, you know, a full X, you know you're at the 10 mark. So even though your piece isn't gridded, you sort of have like a landmark that you can use.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes. And you could do that. You could do that, stitch the whole thing, and then come back and finish off the border, having used those full X's to guide you all the way through the piece.
I like that. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Because I can't, on something that's, 27 inches by 27 inches or whatever, to get all the way down to the corner and be off by one would just be really demoralizing.
Yes, it would be.
Yeah. Most people have managed to make them match up, but it's clear that every time it does, it's a major celebration for folks.
I like the idea of having these landmarks so that you know that you're not off as you're going through the piece.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because that's the other thing. It's great that you're proceeding through the piece and everything is going well and your border matches up, but then, you know, a stitch off here and a stitch off there, and if you're, you know, going through all these different motifs, they can add up, and before you know it, you know, things are kind of wonky.
Right.
So having those as little checkpoints along the way would be really nice.
Yeah, I'm liking your thinking here. I may be just doing that. just as integrated into the border making is a marking of the whole canvas or the whole cloth. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a faux grid.
There it is. Oh, there it is. Write it down. Put your name on it. Faux gridding. Faux gridding by Christine.
Well, and especially for me, because mine's going to be dark. So, it's going to be hard enough to see everything.
Yes. Yeah, let's get to that. A couple of minor things. Someone asked on the wedding day, the royal wedding day, said I had not announced the winners of the hats charts. I did post them in the Sarah Brazier and on the Fiber Talk Facebook page. I did post the winners, but I'll just announce them so everybody feels comfortable. Tammy Tutaro, Christy Poindexter, Julie Connell, Linnell Schaffhauser, and Stephanie Norvis were the winners. And at least one or two has already received their chart from Nicholas, so good for that. And they each chose neat charts, and of course Nicola fixed them up, so that's good. So thanks again to Hands Across the Sea for making that happen. And then I had conversation with Kim Young at Sassy Jacks. There are still charts. Several places still have some charts available of the Sarah Brazier, and Kim has some. But I was asking her about the Lakeside Linen, and she talked to the ladies at Lakeside Linen today. And where I was really concerned is someone had posted, one of these, I heard it was going to be October. And so your heart stops a little bit. But Kim talked to the Lakeside Linen ladies today, and they are back at it and are expecting to start shipping linen soon. So, soon to me means within the next couple, 3 weeks. But anyway, they're back at it. October is not going to be it. It's going to be soon. And so that was really encouraging. And people are starting to get their silk. We're seeing more and more of that. So that's all good. I think that's all just the housekeeping things. Okay, so talk about dyeing your linen.
Okay. What would you like to know?
Well, I'd like to know.
I dyed some linen.
Yeah, but you started with this gorgeous, the dye, I didn't recognize the brand, but it's just a gorgeous, deep, deep, cobalt blue. And so did that translate to the linen?
No. No, but I haven't given up yet. So I went through the whole process, and there were a couple of sort of little shortcuts that I had to take. So the process that you're supposed to use, it's Procyon dye, which is it's a professional grade dye that is chemically bonded to the fiber. So it's not like a RIT dye where the dye molecules just kind of sit between the fibers. This actually chemically bonds to the cellulose in your fabric. So what you're supposed to do is you use salt, and use, washing soda, which is sodium carbonate, as sort of adjuvants to the dye, and you agitate it for a while. So you blend the dye into water. You put the fabric into the water. You've already pre-washed your fabric. There's salt. You add the washing soda. The washing soda raises the pH of the water. That sort of enhances the reaction, the chemical reaction that allows the dye to bond. So that all went very, very well. And then you have to wash it. You rinse it until it's clear, and then you wash it. And I was all good until that point, and then I dried it, and it faded. So It faded to a sort of a denim color, which is nice, but it wasn't what I was going for. So troubleshooting this, what I think went wrong, I think there's two things. One, I suspect that a couple of things. The water, if you have hard water and there's minerals in your water, that can interfere. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a water softener, and I'm also going to add a chelator, which is a chemical that binds to calcium and magnesium and those things that make hard water. So, having access to a lab, I can do that. So I'm going to add a chelator. So that's going to soften the water, and it's going to bind up all those minerals and take them out of the equation. So that's number one. Number two, I'm going to increase the pH. The pH of the solution is supposed to be around 10 or 11. I didn't measure. I just went with the recipe. And like I said, I didn't have washing soda, but you can take baking soda and make it into washing soda by another chemical reaction. So I did that. And as my husband pointed out later, because I couldn't find washing soda in any store, and he said, you order everything online. Why didn't you just order it? And that was a very fair question. I am also going to go to the lab and get something that I can bump the pH up a little bit. I saved the dye, the liquid dye that I used as the bath. So I'm going to use that. I'm going to bump the pH. I'm going to swipe out all the metal ions that might be floating around in there. I'm going to heat it, which I did before. I'm going to do that again because that just tends to speed up any kind of chemical reaction. And I'm going to leave it for a really long time and allow all of the dye molecules to bind to the fabric. I'll probably wash the fabric again because I washed it with a little bit of fabric softener. I want to make sure that's completely gone because that will just coat the fabric fibers and prevent the dye from reaching the cellulose. So I'll wash the fabric again. I'm going to redo the entire process with a bunch of different fail safes in place and see if I can get the dye to adhere a little bit more strongly and get a deeper color. If this is the as dark as it gets, I'm going to go with it. But I'm not convinced that it is. So I'm not giving up yet. I'm going to give it another roll, see what I can come up with.
Okay, dumb guy question. Why did you not start with deionized water?
Because there was no indication that I would need to.
Okay.
And in fact, soft water has minerals, has like sodium bicarbonate, which is baking soda, will soften water. So deionized water is going to have nothing in it. So softening the water is actually going to add things to it. So I could have used like reverse osmosis deionized water, and that wouldn't have helped. Well, it would have helped take out the minerals, but soft water tends to let the reaction go a little bit better. The other thing is that when you're adding washing soda, it's calcium carbonate, so you're already adding minerals back. So if you're what you're doing is you're taking out the metals, you're taking out the things that have. So now we're going to get a little bit more chemistry. So the sodium carbonate and the sodium bicarbonate, both of them have sodium, which has one plus sign on it, right? So it's an ion.
Yep.
All the things that you're trying to swipe out all have a plus two. So those are the ones that interfere with the reaction. So the chelator that I was talking about before only swipes out things that have a plus two. So
Okay.
that's the why.
I
Because
see.
that's
So so deionized water, you would not effectively have gained enough to be worth the trouble.
not much, and not in a way that the chelator isn't going to do it for me.
Right. And
So I
you
can.
have access to all of that, so who cares?
And our water is not particularly hard where I live anyway, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Because I was just surprised, because when you showed in the pictures on Instagram and Facebook, the dye, the liquid dye, and I thought, oh, is this going to be beautiful? Because it was just,
Beautiful color.
oh, it's gorgeous, gorgeous, deep, deep blue. Oh, it's beautiful. And I thought, oh, if she gets anywhere close to that, this is going to be one stunning piece of linen. And then when you said it did not come out that deep. So is it a denim, like a brand new denim color?
Yeah, and I think I might have been a little bit more aggressive with the washing than I needed to be because, I wanted to wash it because in no way did I want any sort of bleed off of that. But
Right.
I also, thinking about this, it's not like I'm going to be, dancing or in the rain with it.
Right.
So as long as I can rinse it clear, I don't have to add, some aggressive soap to it to strip the dye out.
Yeah.
And there's special soaps that you're supposed to use too, and I didn't do that. So, I think I can wash it a lot more gently and have the dye stick a lot better. So there's definitely ways I could have done this better, and I'm gonna have another go at it, correcting those things and see if I can't get a better result.
Okay, well, right out of the gate, you said it was going to be an experiment and a journey. So it's interesting to see. Yeah.
If it worked perfect, then I wouldn't have learned anything, would I?
Right. Right. Plus you got to play chemist. What fun.
Well, it's not even so much that. What I got to do was to stand at my kitchen sink with a bucket, you know, shaking it back and forth for an hour. So I would have missed out on that experience. So.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't want to do that, right?
Okay.
Now I get to do that again. I'm very excited.
Wow. Cutting edge. Fun right there.
Mm-hmm. See, everybody thinks chemistry is very glamorous. It's really not.
Yeah.
It's a lot of times it's just shaking a bucket back and forth for an hour. So there you go.
Okay, well, I'm anxious to see what the second go-round of dye does.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I will let you know.
Okay, well, there we have it. That 45-minute show is now an hour five. We got to stop. Sunday, Mary Corbett. Yep. That Mary Corbett with one T. Oh, she's got things going on at her place. Excited to learn about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that'll be Sunday. And then we'll be back with more of this stuff on Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Take care.